All right, so today we're going to begin with a joke. I'm not a professional joke teller. I don't do it that often. You ready for this one? Okay, here we go. Why is everyone so tired on Easter? Because they just finished a 31-day march. Thank you, Alec. Okay. So, that was a disappointing joke to start out with. I get that. Most years, I know it normally be hilarious because usually Easter comes in April, so we did just finish it. So I just used it the wrong year. Trust me, it's a hilarious joke, okay? Okay, there we go. So why is everyone so tired on Easter? If we would go back to that first Easter when Jesus had died and resurrected, I think that the people back then, whether it was March or April, I have no idea. I don't even know how they figure out when Easter is, honestly. I just look at the calendar. But after that really, really long weekend, that first Easter, I think people were really tired. And we're going to look at that. We're going to look at this story told by Luke. This is in Luke 24. But before we do, we're going to get into a little bit of the background. Luke talks about after Jesus resurrected, later that day, maybe late morning, afternoon, later, there were two people who were walking away from Jerusalem where Jesus had died and was buried, and they were walking 7 miles away to a place called Emmaus. Now, there were two of them. And I'll have to admit, before like a few days ago when I was researching this, there were a lot of assumptions I had about this story that I was dead wrong about. One of those, I assumed it was a couple of guys, and Luke never even says that. He gives us one name of a person, and that's Cleopas. And digging around a little bit, this is just a side note, but John 19:25 mentions a disciple named Clopas. They think it's the same one, and he has a wife named Mary who's watching Jesus as he's hanging on the cross. So a lot of people think that maybe this is this Cleopas or Clopas are the same, and that it's possible this is a married couple. Clopas or Cleopas and his wife Mary walking the 7 mile journey from Jerusalem to Emmaus. Now, that's not important to the story. So we're not even going to use that name, those names anymore. It could be a husband and wife. It could just be two people. But we're just going to call them the two, okay? Does that make sense? Okay, so when you hear the two, that just means the two people who are walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus. All right, so 7 mile walk, and we're going to pick up in Luke 24:15. As the two walked and discussed these things, the things that had happened over the weekend with Jesus's trial, his death, and then early that morning, a report that there had been an empty tomb. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. Now, anybody else think that's a little strange? It's like these two people, they knew Jesus during his life, and then he comes back resurrected, he appears to them, and they don't even recognize him. So maybe my mind starts to go down a rabbit trail. Like, why don't they recognize him? Maybe did he put on one of those silly disguises? Was he wearing like Groucho Marx glasses, a fake mustache? Did he change his clothes? Did he do something with his hairstyle? Did he disguise his voice? Like, what was it that Jesus did to keep himself from being recognized? Now, that's just wild speculation, and it might seem odd, and if it seems odd, that's okay. Because instead of focusing on how Jesus kept himself from being recognized, I want to look at a theme that's talked about in the scriptures that talks about how sometimes the Lord is in a place, but people don't recognize the presence of the Lord. And we're going to go back well over 1,000 years before Jesus lived on earth. There's this really well-known story in the Hebrew scriptures about a guy named Jacob, whose name was later changed to Israel. Anybody ever heard that name? All right, so Jacob/Israel has this one experience. He's a grandson of a guy named Abraham, and he has a dream. And in the dream, he sees a stairway to heaven. And at the top of this stairway to heaven is the Lord. And the Lord speaks to him. Now, we're going to pick up in that story in Genesis 28, 16. And it says, when Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. Early on, there's this idea that maybe sometimes the Lord is someplace, and just there wasn't an awareness of the presence of the Lord until later. Now, I think that that theme is can be found all throughout the scriptures. And we're going to focus, we're going to move and just to one other example. And this is in Jesus' teaching. Jesus has this parable in Matthew 25 where he's talking about the end and judgment. And he calls himself the Son of Man or the King. And in this parable that Jesus tells, he divides people into two groups, the sheep and the goats. And based on these two divisions, he looks at them and he tells the sheep on his right that they're welcomed into eternity. And he said he commends them because they gave him food and water. They gave him hospitality. They gave him medicine. They gave him shelter. They gave him what he needed. And the sheep are really confused. They said, when did we do that? We didn't even know that we did all those things for you, Lord. And Jesus' response is, the Son of Man's response is, whatever you've done for the least of my these brothers of mine, you've done unto me. And so there's this idea that these people had done these things to Jesus directly. They'd taken care of him, but they hadn't been aware of it until later. So as we're kind of wrestling with this, let's get back to our story of the two. Luke 24, 17. Jesus asked the two, what are you discussing together as you walk along? They stood still, their faces downcast. I love this sentence. Sometimes, like in a church, especially on Easter, maybe there's a pressure, you feel like you have to be happy. But what if you're not happy? Like, what if you're down? Well, Jesus shows up. These two have had a long weekend. They're tired, like some of us here are today. Maybe they're downcast. There's something that's bothering them. And when Jesus shows up and he's with them and they don't recognize him, he asks them about it. But I think one thing that's really interesting is that Jesus doesn't take away their sorrow when he shows up. He doesn't make things all right. He doesn't tell them to put on a happy face and smile, turn your frown upside down. Jesus doesn't do anything like that. He shows up, their faces are downcast, and he walks with them. Jesus met these people where they were, and they walked. And they share with him their sorrows. They share with him what's going on in their lives. And after they do, after they talk to Jesus about Jesus and their disappointments, frustrations, confusion. And then they make this really poignant statement in Luke 24, 21. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. But we had hoped. Just quietly let that thought into us. But we had hoped. What a sad sentence. This is a sentence that's spoken of on Easter. A recognition that we had hoped. These guys were disappointed. This is a statement of disappointment. They were disappointed with God. They were disappointed with their lives. They were disappointed with Jesus and what following Jesus looked like. They had this great hope, and they expressed it to Jesus, but we had hoped things were going to be so much different. And this is where they were on Easter Sunday for a while. But we had hoped. Now, you probably have your own "but we had hoped" statement. Like, and we could guess, but we had hoped that God would hear our prayers and heal her, and she would live. But we had hoped that the marriage would have survived. But we had hoped that our lives would have turned out so much differently. But we had hoped, you fill in the blank. Now, your answer is unique, however you fill out the "but we had hoped." But the question is not, "but we had hoped." If you look around in this room full of people today, every life is filled with stories that could answer that, but we had hoped with an expression of some sort of disappointment, but we had hoped. Church isn't a place where we just get together and smile all the time because we feel happy all the time, and if we don't, there's something wrong with us, that we've really blown it and God's punishing it. Church is a place where we can come in and we can be who we are, and sometimes we have but we had hope moments and we're just down, and that's okay. Because the scriptures, the followers of Jesus taught us to mourn with those who mourn and to rejoice with those who rejoice. So if you're coming in here today and you're mourning, I hope you have a sense that someone is mourning with you. If you rejoice today, same. I hope you experience somebody that's rejoicing with you, that there's space for both in this place. And we have a God who is with. Jesus was Emmanuel, our God witness. And there's such a strong sense of the withness of God with Jesus. Jesus is God with us. What a sad statement. A confession on my part is that the hardest part for me of pastoral ministry is dealing with disappointments, both my own and the disappointments of others. Because if you spend any time living, following Jesus or not following Jesus, disappointment is part of life. And sometimes the results aren't what you hope for. Sometimes the things that you're working on really, really hard don't work out. Sometimes tragedy strikes. Sometimes just bad things seem to pile up. Sometimes the expectations that we have just aren't met. And that can be awfully disappointing. Now, if that's you this morning, if you've had a real disappointing experiences with the church, like, I just want to say I get it. Like, that's kind of part of life. That's, unfortunately, as much as I wish church was a positive experience for everybody, it's not. And there are times when sometimes people get hurt even in places like church. But we get hurt in our families. We get hurt all the different places. And we have to deal with those disappointments. So what do we do? What do we do with that? I have a really kind neighbor who sends me a lot of encouraging texts. And one of the things that he does is he sends me jokes sometimes that I can use in church. I've used them a few times. And his jokes are usually funny. Now, unfortunately for you all, he wasn't able to find me a funny Easter joke. He did find me a hilarious Christmas joke, so I'm waiting for December. Trust me, it's going to be funny. But instead, he gave me a comment about a joke that's not funny. And I want to read the text that a neighbor just down the street sent me just this week. And it was this. Some of y'all didn't try God. I'm just going to read it. I don't usually say y'all. Some of y'all didn't try God. Y'all tried church. And when the church hurts you, or when you found out that liars and fake people also go to church, you concluded that God wasn't real or that Christianity was a joke. Now, again, if Christianity is a joke, it's not a joke that's funny. Like, and I hear this, and he goes on to say, like, he doesn't feel this way. And not to just blame Jesus for everything that maybe the church does wrong or people who represent him do wrong. But I have to say, it's awfully disappointing, isn't it? And my heart breaks when I hear stories like these of what happens. Getting hurt by people or a pastor is awfully disappointing. And again, as much as I desire Meridian to be a safe space for people to come, like, I just know that probably not everybody will experience what I hope, and that is very disappointing. And I want to say, if that's you, and you struggle, like, I get it. I understand it. I'm sorry. But one of the things that I hope you do is not to give up on Jesus. Not to just say, hey, I'm going to give up my hope in Jesus because of something that I have experienced. So I'm just asking to consider Jesus and consider the gospel as that we're going to try to lift up Jesus. And we hope that he draws people to himself. So as we do it, like, these human limitations, experiences are difficult, disappointing. And maybe we gather with our heads downcast sometime. But again, lots of people have found hope in Jesus. And I want to look at another story And again, I don't think it's going to be a downer the whole time, but this is another story that could be disappointing. Jesus had these really close friends, Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. These people had been with him throughout his ministry. They'd seen him heal people. They'd seen Jesus do all kinds of amazing things. Then something bad happened to them. Lazarus, the brother, got very sick. So they sent word to Jesus, who was away. Hey, the one you love is sick. Now, Jesus before had spoken a word and healed people. But he didn't do that this time. Jesus could have come right away, dropped everything to go to Lazarus and showed that his love was sincere and healing. But instead, he delayed. And by the time he got to their house in Bethany, he was 4 days late as Lazarus had been dead. And that must have been awfully disappointing. Because let's listen to the sorrow in these words. Because Martha first and then Mary later said the same thing to Jesus. Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. Like, what a statement. Can you hear the sorrow in that? Jesus could have stopped this whole thing, but here they are, devastated. And as we wrestle, how could a loving God allow this to happen? Like, that's, I get that question. Jesus here could have saved Martha and Mary from their 4 worst days of their lives, but he didn't. And again, we might speculate on his motives, but one thing that we know from the scriptures, the story, is that the reason that Jesus failed to heal Lazarus from that sickness was not because he was cruel. It's not because he wanted to see them suffer, and it wasn't because he was callous and immune to it. It's because of this 2-word Bible verse that is so powerful. And it's this: Jesus wept. Say that after me. Jesus wept. Let's say it together. Jesus wept. You just memorized the Bible verse. Congratulations. And it's not just a throwaway one. Isn't this powerful? In the face of disappointment, Jesus showed up to 2 sisters who said, God, Jesus, if you would have been here, this bad thing wouldn't have happened. And he wept with them. Jesus wept. Why would a loving God allow so much disappointment? Let's just let that question simmer. And let's look at this one other teaching that we have from Jesus that maybe seems a little mysterious. Matthew 18:20, Jesus said this during his time on earth. He said, where 2 or 3 gather in my name, there am I with them. Let's think. How many people were on that road to Emmaus? 2. Jesus walked with them. How many sisters were there to mourn the death of Lazarus? 2. And where 2 or 3 are gathered, Jesus promises a presence. Now, Jesus wept with Martha and Mary, and that's really important. And after they wept together, Jesus raised him from the dead. Jesus had already raised from the dead, but after that, he walked with the 2. He walked with them who continued in their disappointment. So again, why? What could possibly ever be the purpose of disappointment, heartbreak? Well, one of the things is that resurrection reveals to us that hope that they had, where they lost that hope. Resurrection gives us a reason for the hope that we have. Resurrection gives us a reason to believe that maybe even disappointment can be the doorway to a deeper hope. Even if one hope dies, that doesn't mean hope dies. That means that one died. Martha and Mary, they wept together. The 2 had hoped that Lazarus would be healed from his sickness and live. And that hope died, but it was replaced by a deeper hope when Jesus brought Lazarus back from the dead to give them hope for eternal life. Healing is a powerful hope. Resurrection is a more powerful hope. The 2 walking, they had hope that Jesus was going to live and he was going to redeem Israel. Now that is a powerful hope, to live and to redeem a nation, a group. Now that hope died when Jesus died on the cross. But when he resurrected, it was replaced by a deeper hope that Jesus had eternal life and came to redeem the whole world. One hope that died was replaced by a deeper hope, and that's resurrection. We still have disappointments. Death still stings. And the disappointment and heartbreak may be the path forward to a deeper hope. Listen to these words from Jesus from Revelation 3:20. Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person, and they with me. Jesus stands at the door and knock. And as crazy as it may sound, what if that door might even be labeled as disappointment? That door might be labeled as death. And Jesus, behold, he stands at the door and knocks. And maybe that door that seems like disappointment is actually the doorway to a deeper hope. Why does Jesus keep himself? Why does God, the presence of the Lord, why does he keep himself from being recognized for a time? Well, one of the things we have to remember is he doesn't stay hidden. He gives people a chance to look, and it's after the fact. There's always this moment after the fact. And just as Jesus walked with the two on the road to Emmaus, and they didn't know it, there was a point later, and we're going to end with that story there. Luke 24, 30 through 32. When Jesus was at the table with the two who were on the road to Emmaus, those two who he had walked with in their 7-mile walk, Jesus took bread, he gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared out of their sight. They ask each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? Is your heart burning? Has your heart ever been strangely warmed? Maybe it's the presence of Jesus with you. Maybe it's the presence of the Lord with you. And maybe you just weren't able to recognize it at the time. Maybe you recognize that now, or maybe there'll be a point later in your life where you'll look back and you'll recognize how the Lord had been present in a way that you hadn't previously known. Maybe Jesus, maybe even disappointment, is the doorway to a deeper hope. If you have a sense of that burning or that a strangely warm sensation or even that desire to follow Jesus or to put hope in Jesus, because I think a lot of Peter even said, hey, where else would we go? There's no other path. You have the words of life. And there's that part of you that's saying, hey, like Jesus, I want to put my hope in Jesus. If that's you this morning, I'm going to ask you to do a very Christian thing of witness and pray with us this prayer that Jesus taught us. The worship team will be coming up forward for our next song. But again, if you have any of that desire or that that surrender or wanting to follow Jesus, I just ask you to pray this prayer with us that Jesus taught us to pray. Our Father in heaven, holy is your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom.